My name is Peter Bright, and I've always struggled to work out what exactly creativity is. Some people use creativity in a very, very positive way, and some spiral down into a deep, dark pit. Hopefully over the next few programs we'll be able to sort of discuss and work out what creativity means to different people, and how it affects relationships and lives. Being a doctor must be a very stressful profession to be in, making literally life and death decisions on the spot. Being an artist doesn't involve this amount of important decision making. An artist's choices are merely self-indulgent whims which have no real impact on the real world. However, there are a lot of important decision makers who use the arts as a form of escapism from the realities of their professions. Even Hitler painted in his quieter moment. Our first guest is Alicia. She's a GP from Devon, and she's also a poet. I met Alicia in Cuba 10 years ago on a riding holiday. This was a chance meeting which has grown into a strong friendship. Here is one of her poems. It's called Driving Time.
Chains of cars link in familiar grooves, humming each to their own tunes, round slippery bends and sticking curbs, and each day to day still flicking on, with nights and lights and all the stars, and the sense of self in each car, what's owned and stored and striven for. And I like to drive the way I do, and throw my rubbish on the floor. There's peel and skins and gum and maps, and I'm creating like a forest heap, an organic compost mulch inside. It's easier that way, I think, and I'll blitz and blow it all one day, and sparkly clean emerged or washed out my mud spat black Fiesta door. I used to sing in Spanish with my tapes, conjectured words and sounds alike, with windows open, except in towns, at least forgetting I might sing aloud. The wiper squeals for lack of rain, I switch it back to slow the speed. These days I'm pensive in the car, listening quiet to Radio 4. There were some days I used to hope the wheel wouldn't hold against the curve. Then a balance Silford in my car, its peels Buddhist, lead-free, mine. And this is all, though I don't deny, my mind does wander while I drive. And if there's a vehicle assembling yours, like a jeweller peering hard inside, my eyes take time to fantasise.
What actually inspires your poetry and stuff? What do you like to write about?
I think often it's emotional states. It's often how I'm feeling, and it's sort of perhaps about making sense of that feeling. And I think feelings are often hard to sort of rationalise, aren't they? And so it's worth sort of playing it out and dissecting, mulling it over, looking at it from different angles and formulating it into something that's then somehow tangible. Often it's odd experiences, so if I've heard something odd or come across something curious, so something that sort of piques your imagination in some way or is incongruous and sets your mind thinking and making phrases, and you start to roll them over in your mind. And
so your poetry is based on sort of real things and not just imagination.
Yeah, so usually there is some sort of external stimulus, but then the pleasure in the writing is that it can take you into some fantastical spaces as well.
Do you actually consider yourself to be a creative person?
I'd say I have creative urges. Whether I'm actually a creative person, yeah, it's always this thing, isn't it? It depends how actively you engage. So, for instance, I feel, you know, to call yourself an artist or creative person, you have to be regularly actively engaged and that sort of thing. So I say I have creative urges, and sometimes I do something about it and sometimes I don't.
Right, so you just do it when you want to, basically.
Yeah, I'd say, though, you know, discipline does play a role for sure. So, for instance, I've done quite a few courses, one through Exeter University and one through the Open University, and having that focus means that for a while you become a regularly creative person. So I'll be writing something every week, and that, you know, feels good. And I think having that external guiding you through or giving you tasks makes it, in a way, much easier than to be your own regulator or set aside the time yourself. And
so you think that your creative urges need to be sort of poked and prodded into action?
I think all of us can do with a little bit of stick and carrot, can't we? It's difficult sometimes to keep yourself, yeah, to be self-motivating or self-regulating and self-disciplined.
You actually get satisfaction out of writing poetry?
For sure, yeah.
Do you think it sort of makes you a better person to write poetry?
That's a whole different question, isn't it? No, and the bottom line is probably, you know, it is a self... I think you were talking about being self-absorbed previously, and, you know, I'm aware that, really, that, you know, for me it's a personal pleasure, whether it has any external frame of reference, who knows, you know, and it is a introverted activity, it's a form of introversion which I really enjoy. I mean, obviously it depends on what type of person you are, isn't it, and a lot of artists who are able to share their work, and the work is externally validated and brings pleasure to a lot of people, so it'd be nice to enter that sort of category of person as well. But
that's
a whole different level of talent, I think.
But you do actually sort of need to do it, do you think?
I think I'd feel unsatisfied if I didn't, yeah. There is a handle on the door, holding this and that and thought. It pushes slow across the floor. One never knows how to start, what should be said and really ought, and which of doors will open more. Have you pushed two doors apart? And plants stretch out across your desk in a ravelling, wild, organic mess. I always look across the room. Perhaps the green is grown some more. Perhaps it reaches through the gloom, willowing through the glassy pane, spilling through some substance floor, with the tendrils twirling like a boon of boughs and branches, briar and blame. And the plants stretch out across your desk in a ravelling, wild, organic mess.
How do you think that creativity plays a part in your emotional life with relationships and things? I mean, are you a pain to be with, or do you think when you're on a creative role, or are you actually quite easy to live with?
Could go both ways, couldn't it? Because I think the creativity can be a currency within the relationship. It can be shared, and the sort of depending the other person's interested in the pleasure in the words and sharing the words and exchanging them can be a creative and really fun process. And so we've been painting together, haven't we?
We have done that sort of stuff, yeah.
And that's nice, isn't it, to be able to go and share that creative process as well. But also, as you say, if you get very absorbed into something that you're doing, then that can exclude another person. You don't always want to take them with you where you're going mentally, or necessarily to share the outcome, depending, I suppose, on poetry, if it's particularly personal. But even more so if you're writing actually about that person, then, you know, who knows, you end up in a world of trouble.
So do you actually find yourself sometimes writing hate poems?
Hate poems. Say the emotions, it would never be that clear a single emotion, because I think most emotional states are fairly ambivalent, aren't they? So that I don't think I've ever written any pure hate poems, because I think I never really feel filled with pure hate, fortunately. But I think it's always a state of, you know, the love state sort of trade-off, isn't it? And it's trying to suss that out. And that's where the sort of interesting exploration can occur.
I think everybody is creative in their day-to-day tasks. Some of us use it in a pseudo-intellectual way. Our creativity becomes a f***ing infatuation with ourselves, which either inflates our own ego or pitches us into despair. It becomes an excuse for not being able to cope with the real world, an anaesthetic or a poison. Alicia invited me for lunch, and I was intrigued to know if she felt that creativity was connected with madness.
It taps into the sort of feeling that creativity is linked to madness, and that somehow to enter a creative state you have to be filled with something else that isn't sort of in some way normal, but is also in some way weird and wonderful, and taps into deeper sort of primeval parts of...
So is creativity a madness then, do you think?
Well, saying if a sort of person who's creative is referred to as bipolar, is it, you could say it goes both ways, isn't it? Is it dismissing their creativity as being something akin to madness and therefore not sensible and not sort of real? Or is it saying, well, this is something that comes from a different place? But it could be a derogatory sort of...
Right, okay.
Appendage, really, couldn't it? But I suppose historically, sort of creativity has been linked, hasn't it?
So do you think
creative
sort of
genius?
Do you think creative people are more prone to being ill, in the sense of mentally ill?
For sure, there are a lot of artists who have had mental health problems. But there are a lot of people, I guess, who have mental health problems who aren't creative, and vice versa.
So what you're saying then is that there's actually not a lot of difference between being normal and being creative, really?
You do have to be able to open your mind, don't you? And if you're being creative, you can't discount any possibilities. You want to explore things in different ways and be prepared to go in places that people perhaps wouldn't necessarily either want to go or be prepared to go or imagine going. And so part of it's about playing, isn't it? Playing with your mind and playing with whatever material you're working, or not feeling that is a thoroughly self-indulgent process, thinking that it's something that is important and is significant, and that essentially that it's not madness. For Katie Besson, it can feel like madness, perhaps. You have to suspend that sort of disbelief in yourself and have the faith that what you're doing does somehow have some meaning.
Okay. So, sort of, if a creative person sort of has a controlled sort of sense of meaning, then they probably aren't mad anyway, are they? So creativity does not necessarily mean that you're mad.
No.
Well, that's a relief.
Do you have a touch of madness?
Do I think I'm mad? Yes. Barking, absolutely barking.
There was this moth flew in my ear. I was on a lane out of town. It was dull and dark with no one near. I should have put my visor down. This irritating thought deferred till after the incident occurred. My motorbike went all awry. I halted by a nearing wall and climbed off, fluttering deep inside, to find a phone and make a call. A doctor answered. The tone was masked. "What is your main concern?" she asked. I thought, and then replied. It may just all be in my head, no slumber fly in wax inside. But what if moving, not yet dead, and what if moved to be unkind? It roots and ruffles through my mind.
No, it's just interesting. I always feel that sort of creative people probably use the excuse of it all, of being totally mad, purely as an excuse. And in fact, really, that everybody is slightly creative, and it's just to degrees of madness and degrees of creativity. And I just question the sort of trendy sort of bipolar sort of, you know, excuse, really.
I think you're right. I think it's semantics, isn't it? It's a word, it's bandied about, and it doesn't really necessarily have any real meaning in that context. But it could be a cover, a word to cover, and as I say, an excuse or something to be flippant about. But there is a danger to it, isn't there, as well? One, to sort of undermine the unpleasantness for somebody who is actually bipolar, and what that means to them, and how disruptive and awful that is. And so it sort of doesn't really give due credit to the awfulness of that particular illness. And also, I guess, it also denies the benefits and the positivity of creativity.
Mm. I mean, lots of creative people who call themselves creative people actually talk about the dark pit, when they fall into that dark pit, which is a dark depression, which is caused through creative things not working properly, I suppose. Does everybody get that?
Sort of depressive states.
Yeah.
I think inevitably, really.
So it's not exclusive for artists and writers and
But it depends
musicians.
What you do with it, isn't it? So that's interesting. I mean, from everything, and I guess mood can be controlled by so many different things, can't it? Your interpersonal relationships, your work or living environment or so many different things. But I guess maybe creative people examine that state of mind more deeply, and rather than just feeling the overwhelming misery of it, and to do something perhaps with it to express it. And I guess it's the expression that becomes interesting, what you do with that state of mind and those feelings, and putting them into something, turning them into something that is then in some way externally visible, can be helpful. Also, people who can't sort of if you don't have a creative outlet, then people go in different ways, don't they? Some people self-harm, don't they?
I suppose so, yeah.
I mean, there are people who don't seem to ever enter low states, but maybe they sort of, maybe their coping mechanisms are distracting themselves, so they may only very peripherally acknowledge that state, but actually force themselves into another state by whatever means to sort of glide over it and not really examine what's happening to them. And that, to my mind, can only be sustainable for a certain period of time.
It is sort of potentially glamorous to be a depressing person or a depressed person. If you think of sort of people, the only person I can think of at the top of my head is if you think of Sid Vicious and his sort of rapid decline. You know, he went into, well, through heroin, I suppose, really was the main problem. Mm. But he sort of, that glamorous sort of dark side of creativity.
Kurt Cobain and
all well, yeah, exactly, all that, and all that sort of crowd, you know, sort of sex, drugs and rock and roll.
Mm.
Don't you think that sort of like glamorises the depressive side of a character?
Yeah.
Maybe some creative people are only interesting because they are ill.
I think you're right that inevitably the bad things, you know, like smoking, just, you know, always in some ineffable way, just are attractive and are appealing, and although maybe they're not appealing to everybody, but, you know, if you've got a little bit of the dark side in you, then maybe it does resonate and somewhere, and why that should be, there may not be any rational explanation for that.
Hmm. I just think it's interesting that sort of, if you think of like Pollock, Jackson Pollock was he drank a lot, and that ultimately, you know, led to his demise. Well, it didn't actually lead to his demise, but he was going downhill.
Mm.
And, you know, you wonder whether that sort of romanticism about the artist starving in his little studio, in his garret, yeah, you know, goes in part and parcel with the tag of being creative. And do you think that creative people possibly adopt that tag and see themselves as this isolated, downward spiralling, spinning person?
Well, I think it does depend on the environment in which a person is creative in, and certainly if there isn't, for instance, and perhaps it does come back to finances, economics, and if there isn't the financial, environmental climate to people to be able to market their work or sell their work or make a living, then, and if creativity, I'm thinking of my brother, is your main passion to the exclusivity of everything else, and you feel that this is your life's ambition and work and that that's more important than anything else in the world to you, you can quickly become unstuck if there isn't a market or you don't have a patron or somebody who can subsidise you and look after you when you're sort of in that sort of state. That's it. I mean, there's so many these days that, you know, so many people have managed to find some degree of flexibility, haven't they, and sort of, in a sense, managed to compartmentalise and so have a creative life, almost have two or three lives and multi jobs and have a routine working life and looking at Peter, yeah, and then, you know, do their creative work on the side, but then inevitably there's some compromises. You can never be completely full of that work that you want to be, but maybe that's also a good thing, so that you're never totally don't become so disorientated and separate from the real world, because that's also can be dangerous. And but then maybe you never completely fulfill your creative potential if you're not able to totally immerse yourself in that world too. Who's to say?
So
discipline does have a big role, but discipline, marketing, yeah, economics, depends how your brain works, I think, as to how well you can look after yourself while you're engaged in these sorts of things.
Creative people aren't necessarily special people. It's just that they use their skills and their imagination possibly in a different way to the rest of us. So a creative person will probably be more introverted and self-obsessed.
That's quite a generalisation, Peter. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. Do you think? I think I'm going to put the question back to you, because now that you've made this huge and sweeping statement about...
Yes, I'm self-obsessed. The balance between life and art is impossible to maintain. One always pulls harder than the other. To achieve a successful career in the arts always depends on success and failure. It is ingrained in our psyche from an early age that failure is a bad thing. From birth to death, we are compared, or we compare ourselves with people that have failed or succeeded. To be successful is to appear to our peers as socially, financially, and intellectually superior. To fail is the complete opposite, to be ostracised by this successful society. A preoccupation with success and its consequent obsession creates within us a crisis of identity. Am I successful? Do I appear to be successful? Do my friends think I'm successful? It is all a facade. We have been taken in by what we see and what we are being told. Success and failure depends on circumstances and elements of chance. It also depends on your definition of success and failure. To be successful involves a considerable amount of risk and judgment. A successful individual relies on the principles of efficiency. Success is that knife edge that teeters between effectiveness and catastrophe. An understanding of failure is important and should always be incorporated into a life business plan. Successful artists must feel like it is Christmas every day, where everything you touch becomes gold. But maybe this success is a failure in itself, a point of famine where nothing needs to be proven anymore.
There is a tradition of poets that are doctors, aren't there?
Tradition of poets, you were saying. We were saying earlier about me. And I was thinking about Danny Absey, who had come to my school in Plymouth College when I was doing my A-levels and read... I think it's before I decided to do medicine at the time, and he read a fantastic poem about his, whether it was about his dad, I think, who'd been a brain surgeon, which is really moving. He read it in front of the entire school, and it was quite an incredible moment. Whether also because we'd all been standing for 20 minutes and felt slightly faint, or and then the sort of the images that he were describing. But amongst others, yeah, John Keats and William Carlos Williams and.
Do you think you use creativity in your practicing as a GP?
For sure. I think it is a GP concentration. Certainly in England, it's this sort of tiny moment, really, just 10 minutes in which so much has to happen, so much exchange of information, potentially intimate physical examinations, decisions, plans that encapsulate possibly sort of life, death, issues, to all sorts of traumas, to, you know, minor, irrelevant and sometimes quite peculiar and entertaining things. And I think as a GP, how you use that time and how you elicit information from a patient involves a lot of creative skill, and also to put that person at ease, and also to wrap up the information or the diagnosis in a way that is understandable and digestible, really, for that person. And often people won't want to hear what you have to say, or won't be able to accept it, or what one says may involve, you know, maybe just the start of a whole process of unpleasant investigations or potentially life-implicating consequences. And the more alert you are to the way that might be received, and the more imagination you're able to use in perceiving how you, what effect your words have, the better, really, and the potentially more satisfying the experience can be for the patient, and the smoother the process can feel, and less traumatic, really, it can be for that person who is vulnerable and possibly uncomfortable and anxious about how things may be.
So when you're actually doing, when you've got someone in your consulting room, so do you feel that in many respects you have to become almost like an actor and take on a part and think of it, of how to portray this role for that specific person?
I think there can be a performance element, and also you do have to make sure that you dampen, you know, often people are often angry or come with all sorts of other agendas and will try to sort of hook you into that. And I think you have to sort of almost be Buddhist about it and try and keep your own, you know, keep a lid on your own emotions, keep those inside, and sort of work with what's coming with that person, and also access medical information that is there to use and apply that, but keeping your own emotional state down. At the same time, you have to feel, and you have to, in a sort of transactional sort of analysis sort of way, understand the emotions that you're getting from that patient, and try and respond to them in an emotive way that patient will feel responded to. At the same time, often we do have to sort of reframe. Also, sort of, I suppose the creativity comes in when you sort of enter that patient's world, imagining yourself in their context and trying to help them, particularly sort of psychological problems, trying to imagine sort of different approaches or how they might address various problems that they're coming into, whether sort of conflicts or relationships or other conflicts at work. And I suppose in that sense you're sort of working quite closely side by side mentally with that person, but having to use your imagination and creativity to think about what are the possible options, what are the solutions, how might this person be able to find a way through their difficulties?
So the old expression, he had a good bedside manner, I mean, do you think that good bedside manner is basically the ability to think in not only in a compassionate way, but also in an imaginative way, to actually communicate with the person you're dealing with?
I think that sort of encapsulated it really well. And I think, well, obviously, you know, traditionally a good bedside manner perhaps had some negative connotations, a little bit of sort of, you know, we used to be much more paternalistic as doctors, and now we have taken obviously a step back from that and realise that it's much more about partnership and working together. But I think you're right, it's the much imagination and creativity you can bring to that, the better, really.
So the sort of the creative part of being a doctor is really purely with the communication skills.
One element, obviously, there's also the... Yeah, sometimes it's hard to know, isn't it? There are the sort of parts of your brain that recollect the weird or wonderful sort of conditions and things. We call them sort of zebras in the medical sphere, the things that you've only ever seen once in a zoo or a pathology pot, but you have to have still there in the back part of your brain, so that if some peculiar symptoms, you know, a patient brings some peculiar symptoms and that gets flagged up, whether that's actually actively creative or whether it's just sort of memory, it's hard to know. But yes, I suppose probably the creative parts do come more in the interactions. For me anyway, I don't know how that is for other people, obviously, and other doctors, how they experience that.
I had a painting tutor who taught me for 2 years, and then after 2 years he said, everything I've taught you, forget. So in many respects, what you're saying is about learning about these zebras is very much the same sort of thing. You go through the process of learning about these things, but then have to forget them.
That's right.
But then at the drop of a hat, you have to bring it back into play if it's
there.
Reaccess
them, yes. Yeah.
So in many respects, that's more of a sort of a... It's not so much a creative thing, is it? It's more of a cataloguing thing, isn't it?
Probably, yeah.
But then you have to have the ability to actually snatch it out at the right time, so to speak.
The last two poems you heard were Rooms for Thought and There Was This Moth. Being a doctor requires a myriad of skills, and the ability to be the actor, the philosopher, and the poet are important facets to this vocation. It is not surprising that within their profession, several have crossed over into the arts and entertainment world. This must have been their pill. I've learnt a few things from my chat with Alicia. Firstly, never try to interview a doctor with a few glasses of wine inside you, otherwise you might end up being quietly analysed. I think my views on artists as special people have been galvanised. Artists are hedonists who submerge themselves in a cold bath of self-indulgence, debating in their own heads their self-importance. They are not unique. They are zebras. Welcome to my zoo, my petri dish. If you want to contact me, you can reach me through www.peterbright.co.uk. If you have any comments, I'd be grateful to hear them. Thanks.
Yeah, I'll have a piece of chicken, please. Okay.
Mm. It's so cold.
Well, I think it's a good job of doing some cycling.
Splendid. That's splendid. And wrapped up, put your hat on, and put your gloves on. And...
Not really. The weather for that.
It's rooted.
Okay.
Some pine nuts.
I want olives.
I can't remember if you're an olive person or a person.
Yep.
Did you
have
breakfast?
I had anchovies, not anchovies.
Actually,
no, I didn't know. I didn't have anchovies.
Pretty hideous.
Artichokes.
Oh, breakfast.
Yeah.
Make the urine musty.
Makes me what?
Urine musty.
Is that good or bad?
We'll see what you think later.
I'll send you an email and tell me what it smells like.
So it tastes kind of weird. Something kind of bad. But it makes it go sort of green and yellow colour. And enjoy.
Too much.